before we start the show, just a couple of notes. Once again, as usual, there is news between when we recorded this and when we put it out. This time, Trump actually put out a immigration proposal that had a solution for the Dreamers in exchange for the wall and a whole bunch of other restrictions on legal immigration. And it looks like the Senate's kind of ignoring them and doing their own thing anyway. So we'll see. It also came out that back in June, Trump actually did try to fire Mueller and did not, because the White House counsel said they would quit if he did. And then there were some other more minor things, but those were the big ones that happened. So as usual, we're not going to talk about those because they hadn't happened yet when we recorded this. So on to the show. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, January 25th, 2018. It's a little bit after 4 UTC as we're starting to record this. I am Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is with me. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello.
So how was your week, Yvonne? Did you have a good time? Oh, wait. I shouldn't do that. We'll get to that in a second. I need to always put the agenda first, or people don't know why they would tune in.
Right.
No, they would just say,
yes,
I don't care what's happening with Yvonne's week. Click.
Right.
Done. Next.
Done. End of story. Yeah.
Yeah.
You're supposed to be recording the podcast, not to listening to one of your old ones.
We're recording the podcast right now.
Never mind.
Anyway, the agenda is, number one, the government shutdown. Brief as it was, and the aftermath of it, what the consequences might be, did the Democrats play it right, did the Republicans play it right, and where do we go from here, including the continuing immigration debate, which keeps changing by the day, because a certain person who is the president keeps saying different things. And then that's segment one. And then the next segment is basically all the Mueller developments. It's been a little while since we've talked about the... Wait, it's Mueller, right? I keep saying it wrong. It's Mueller. Mueller.
Isn't it Mueller?
I think it's Mueller. It's Mueller.
Not Mueller? I thought
it's
it was
Mueller. The Mueller investigation.
Okay. All right. Mueller, Mueller, Miller, whatever. Okay. The guy. Yeah.
Anyway, sure. It's been a while since we talked about it, and this week there are a whole bunch of new things that sort of came up that are either directly related to that or indirectly related to that or whatever, and so we're going to talk about that for a bit. And then for our third segment, we're not going to have a third segment. And the reason why is Apple actually launched this new nifty little thing a little while ago that gives some statistics on not just how many people are listening to your podcast, but the behavior of those people. And one of the things is, on average, apparently, of people who use Apple devices and use Apple software to listen to our podcast, which is actually a fairly small fraction of the people who listen based on my own stats, which is unusual for a podcast, but whatever. Most people only make it through, well, the average, I should say. On average, people make it about 60% of the way through our podcasts, which may be a hint that maybe we're rambling a little bit too much.
Yeah.
Maybe.
I'm pretty sure we are.
Now, I appreciate that it's 60%, not like 5. It's not like they're like turning
it's
it on.
It's not like they hear 2 seconds of me and they're like, oh, fuck this. We're done. We're out.
But apparently,
there are people who did that. But anyway.
Apparently, when we, you know, are doing our 2 hour shows, lots of people just drop off before the end. Although, you know, some people
have other busy things. I mean, there are certain podcasts.
Just to be clear, if our average is 60%, a bunch of people are listening to more than that, which is cool.
That's right. I mean, there are certain podcasts I sometimes listen to, and I just sometimes don't have time to listen to the whole thing. It just, you know, that happens.
Well, I mean,
there
are a number of, I mean, I subscribe to pretty much everything, but, you know, definitely the 3 hour type podcasts no, I'm very rarely going to listen to the whole thing. And so I understand. And I speed up my podcasts, too, when I listen to them. So, okay, so we're going to try to make it a little bit shorter. But rather than keeping our same old format and saying, we're just going to try to keep it under 2 hours, let's keep each segment shorter.
Instead of doing three segments,
we'll do two. And plus this starting segment thing.
Right.
And now, back to where I started. Did you have a good week, Yvonne? We have to have your report on Thailand.
Yes. You know, there's a couple of things about Thailand. And yes. We don't realize. Do you...
Yeah, Yvonne just got back from a business trip to Thailand.
I forgot about this. I'm sure I read it in the news. But, you know, there was a military coup in Thailand about 3 years ago. It's basically a military dictatorship right now.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I've forgotten as well. Like,
exactly.
Thailand just isn't one of those countries that is top of mind in the American news.
And it's just not like everybody gives a fuck two shits about this. So recently I'd seen a segment on CNN International where the guy who is, I mean, there is a prime minister, but he is de facto appointed by this military junta that is really running the show, even though there is a king of Thailand as well. But it was supposed to be a constitutional monarchy and the military took over. So anyway, the king's still there. There's pictures of the guy all over the place, okay? Uh-huh. And castles and palaces and Buddha all over the place. It, you know, things that I hadn't seen, like, really before. Because, the other times I've been in the area, it's just Australia, there's none of that shit. And in Hong Kong's just, you know, it's a very different metropolis itself.
Thailand is a different country than either of those two. You expect things to be different.
There are certain things. I will say that you go across, say, North America, for example, you go to Canada, Mexico, the U.S., there are a whole bunch of constants that I see in cities. Okay, all right. Not so much. There's a big disparity between all of those. Okay. And the one thing is that, it's really a military dictatorship. And it's like we don't give a shit about that. Number one. To realize. Okay.
So did you notice a real difference on the ground in terms of how people interacted with anything?
Not really. No, not at all. No. So that was the one thing that I found interesting. And the purpose of my trip was it was a meeting and it was a team building exercise. Okay.
Did you build your team?
We did build a team. I let them pick what they wanted to do. They gave me a couple of options, and I asked, "What does the team want?" So one was like to do a boat ride. The other one was to do a zip line thing. Uh-huh. All right.
And you're like, and I've been
I
on asked, a boat.
What do they want to do the zip line? I said, "What do you guys want to do?" And they said they wanted to do the zip lines. I'd never done a zip line before. Have you?
I have not. Not a real one. I've done like, you know.
Yeah, I take that back. I did like one in like camp. Okay, like 20 plus 30 years ago. Okay,
I've done the kind that are fake. Like they don't even strap you in because they're only 2 feet off the ground.
That was real. That I did at camp. Okay, all right. We had a real zip line. But anyway, but it was one. This was 24 zip lines through an entire course of them. Okay, all right, that were like to the side of a damn mountain. Okay,
so pretty high off the ground. So not
extremely high off the ground. Mm-hmm. And I think we talked about this earlier about the fact that as I've gotten older as well, you mentioned it. Yes. You know, I'm not that good with heights anymore.
Okay.
Look.
So how'd you do?
I did it, okay? In part because there's no, like, early termination out of this thing.
Once you're on it, you have to go.
Oh, yeah, you have to go through the thing. There's no going back. You can't backtrack. There's no, you know, and there's no, let me get off on this one. Down. No. Mm-hmm. You have to go through the damn thing.
If such options existed, would you have utilized them?
Yes.
Okay.
I would have said... After zipline 15, 16, or whatever, I'm done. I'm out. I'm gonna go grab a beer. You guys finished this damn. But there was no such option. And the thing is that so the you know, some of the trees extremely high up, right? And so they put this wooden platform around. If you look at the picture that they sent with the maze, it looks like at the tree, the platform even has a railing.
Uh-huh.
There is no such railing.
There's no railing. Like, you could step off and plummet 100 feet to your death or whatever.
Yeah, but, well, you do have a safety line, okay,
right,
that you're attached with at all times, okay? They don't let you go up there. But the thing is that, look, say, listen, you could, we were a dozen people in a fucking platform way the fuck up there, right? Okay? Not a lot of room with no guardrail, okay? I mean, any stupid move, and you could be hanging from that goddamn safety line off the side of a platform, dangling off the side. How much of a good feeling would that really be? So, I was in the ones that were really high up.
Yeah.
What my strategy was very simple, okay? I went through the zip line, okay, no problem. And then I got there, and then what I did is, and I looked at the tree and just stared directly at the tree without looking at any of the altitude or anything that really to show me how high up I am.
Uh-huh.
I'm not looking down. I'm not looking back. I'm just staring at this damn tree. Okay. All right. Keep focus on the tree. No problem. It's not like my fear is like to the point where I'm debilitated. There was actually somebody in the group in front of us that this is the worst thing that was happening, that was having complete panic fit about the heights and the thing. And it was slowing our group down massively. Okay.
Mm. Right. And this person was not you.
No, at all. No, I may not have been comfortable, but I wasn't panicking either. I just was not comfortable, okay? It just, you know, I just really didn't want to be there. But I just, you know, I wasn't having a panic attack, okay? All right,
as mm-hmm. well.
All right, I know, you know, my logic knew, look, I got a safety line. I got a trained staff here. It's going to be fine. I don't like it, but it's going to be fine, okay? All right, so I just kept focus and... You know, the one thing about holding onto the damn tree and just looking at it was that, okay, I'm having this anxiousness about the fucking thing. Let's get off this fucking thing. Let's just go through the next line. Just get off this thing. The trees, some of them were full of ants.
Oh.
Just like ants. These were the biggest ants I've ever seen in my life, Sam.
Okay.
Okay. They were like massive. I don't understand what the irradiated ants. Listen, I don't know.
Like, how big are we talking? Like the size of a thumb or something, or what?
We're talking about ants that were like they looked like about an inch long.
Okay.
Okay. They were very big and black. They were just big. I mean, they were some of the damn biggest ants I've ever seen in my life. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh great. So either I go and I'm. Well, I get bitten by these fucking, like, ants, okay? Or I'm trying to figure out how to avoid getting close to the ants, how to not look down, and just stay calm, okay? Through this whole thing. But I managed to get through the whole thing and stayed calm and got to the end. And that's it. I only, you know, I threatened the guy who organized it with death. Multiple occasions, and I told them that either there was some fucking champagne, you know, that evening, or I'm just, you know, gonna kill you all. Like some of the things. And so we got through it, and it was fine. Okay. All right. That was one thing about being there. The other anecdote that I want to mention, that this is something that's never happened to me, and I've been on a gazillion long haul flights in my life. You always mm-hmm. get a baby that cries.
Right.
A baby cry for an hour. You know, for a while, then the babies get tired, they fall asleep. Mm-hmm. Okay? So I did this route where I flew through Qatar. Okay? Alright? You know, and so the flight from is Miami to Qatar to Bangkok. Okay? On the flight back, just 15 and a half hours, 16 hours, which I'm a little bit pissed that I did not get a window seat, because it actually this Great Silk Route actually went much further north than I've seen before. It went over Greenland.
Hmm. Okay.
And I am like so fucking pissed off that I
you couldn't get a good view.
No. I've never been to Greenland. I wanted to fucking like when I woke up and I realized I'm looking at the map that we're going to go over Greenland and I didn't get a chance to look at it. I'm really pissed at myself.
Right.
So anyway, this baby on the flight
cried the whole time.
Cried for 13 plus hours of the 15 and a half hours. I had never seen a baby. I mean, the baby just would not stop crying. He cried for the first at least over 12 hours nonstop of the flight since before takeoff. Okay. And fell asleep finally. And then they had to wake him up because we're getting ready to land. And he just started crying again.
Wow. I mean, maybe must have been sick or something.
I mean, I don't know.
Had an ear infection or something like that kept it up.
But it was just insane. I just never, ever had. I mean, but even with an ear, I mean, they get tired after, you know. I mean, but this baby did not get tired, Sam. This baby just kept on crying and crying and crying and crying and crying. I'm like, holy shit, man. How is this possible? Now, I do carry with me these noise reduction headphones and stuff, yeah. And I managed to muffle it substantially, you know, and still managed to get some sleep. But it's like I fall asleep or whatever, and then all of a sudden I just wake up and I'm just hearing wow, 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 wow. I'm like, oh, this is just, I'm like, holy shit. It's just, yeah.
That sounds awesome. Now, okay, we should move on to the next segment, but I do want to get, like, aside from the military dictatorship thing, this was your first visit to Thailand, right? Any general impressions of the country and the people? And, like, when you went to Hong Kong, you mentioned a bunch of things. Anything about Thailand, or was it, like...
One of the things about Thailand that I noticed was, Jesus, it seems it's so catered to tourists, so much more than almost any other country I've been to recently.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. It seemed like, I mean, of course, like reading up back on Thailand a little bit, remember that, you know, Thailand's economy started getting really surging because during the Vietnam War, it was the place where GIs would go on vacation a lot.
Yeah.
On leave, there was the Thailand. Okay, so there's a lot of I mean, there was a restaurant serving like po' boy sandwiches. I'm like, what the heck, really, in Thailand? What the hell? So it was stuff like that. One thing that scares me about Thailand, we're talking about climate change, right?
Yeah,
man, Thailand lies really low on the water. Bangkok. I mean, damn, man. I'll tell you what. I've said before, rich places, they'll build seawalls. Man, I looked at, you know, we went on a little a boat tour around some of the canals around Bangkok, which are so polluted. My God, Jesus. I mean, I'm just... First is the level of pollution in the water over there. And then I was thinking, my God, look, the sea level rise here. My God, it destroys half, you know, a good chunk of the city.
Right.
So that was, I will tell you that's one thing that kept nagging in my mind as I saw that.
Well, one of the things that there too, even in relatively poor countries, the other thing is, yes, climate change is happening, and yes, it's starting to have significant effects in low-lying countries, but there is some time frame. It's not like it happens in a month. You know, no. It happens over the course of decades. And so, you know, the situation now may not be the same as the situation in 10 or 15 years. And so there's still, even assuming the climate change itself doesn't get reversed, the oceans don't stop rising, et cetera, there's time for humanity to adapt.
Oh, no, I completely agree with that. The one thing that I'm saying is that I do see how because of lack of resources in certain places like this, the only option will be for people to abandon certain areas, okay, and move somewhere else. That's going to be the adaptation in certain cases because they're just not going to have the resources to do something else. They're just going to have to move. And it's like you said, it's not going to be a move that happens like, you know, all of a sudden you have to move in 1 week. Right. It will slowly start happening, and then your house will be flooded once every, you know, a year, and then it gets flooded every, you know, 9 months, and then it, you know, to the point that you're like, well, I guess we really have to get the hell out of here. You know?
Yeah. Because what? Yeah, because you can only rebuild so many times before you're like, fuck this, I'm going somewhere else.
Exactly. And that's what happened in places. Look, even with hurricanes, for example, you know, talking about down here, we've had the impact of hurricanes, you know, the last couple of years. Look, it's happening right now in Puerto Rico. People are leaving.
Right.
You know, their exodus right now estimated, I would say by the end of next month, 500,000 people have left since the hurricane. And here in South Florida, for example, and this is not something limited to like what's happening in Puerto Rico, and in South Florida, after Andrew hit Homestead, they suffered a significant that area of South Florida suffered a huge population loss after the hurricane because of how the infrastructure and everything was destroyed. So it is what happens with, you know, big climate impacts or earthquakes or even like volcanoes and those things. And we wind up moving and adapting to the fact that we can't just stay where the hell we were before.
Well, on that happy note, let's take a break. We will come back and we'll talk about the government shutdown, its aftermath, and immigration.
Well, is that so much happier?
Well, it's exciting, right?
Woo!
Yeah. Back after this. Hold on just a second. I have to... My dog is eating a can of bean dip that Alex left out in my office.
Nice.
Hold on.
Do-do-do. Hello, this is Kendra. I'm here to let you know about Sam the Curmudgeon's other podcasts, the Wiki of the Day podcasts. Wiki of the Day comes in three varieties, popular, random, and featured. Each highlights a new Wikipedia article each day. They just pick the articles differently. This week on Random Wiki of the Day, you would have heard this summary for Year End Spectacular, 1996. Year End Spectacular, 1996, was the third and final Year End Spectacular professional wrestling event produced by Frontier Martial Arts Wrestling on December 11, 1996. The event was a part of the 1996 Year End Sensation Tour, which concluded with the year-end spectacular event. The event marked the in-ring return of Atsushi Onita since his retirement at the 6th anniversary show and the retirement of Mr. Pogo, as both men teamed up with Masato Tanaka and Tetsuhiro Kuroda against the Funk Masters of Wrestling team of Terry Funk, Hisakatsu Oya, and the Headhunters in a Texas Tornado Street Fight death match. Other predominant matches on the event were an interpromotional match between Hayabusa and the Great Sasuke, which Hayabusa won, and a title unification match between the Gladiator and WING Kanemura for Gladiator's FMW Brass Knuckles Heavyweight Championship and Kanemura's FMW Independent Heavyweight Championship, which Gladiator won to unify both titles, and both titles became collectively known as the FMW Double Championship. That's it. See? Fun, entertaining, and educational, right? Okay, now look for and subscribe to the Wiki of the Day family of podcasts on your podcast playing software of choice, or just go to wikioftheday.com to check out our archives. Now back to Curmudgeon's Corner. Do-do-do.
Okay, we are back. So... I inserted the note in last week's show, but the government did indeed shut down. They did not come to a deal last Friday evening. The government shut down. It was shut down Saturday, Sunday, and then Monday. They came to a deal, and the government was back. Let's talk.
They came to a very, very short-term deal, yes.
They kicked it back to February 8th.
Right. I mean, so, like 2 weeks. Basically, we're going to be talking about this again in less than 2 weeks. Yes.
Yeah. So the couple of questions that apply here are, first of all, did the Democrats pick the right strategy in forcing this in the first place? Because as much as people are going back and forth on the blame game, the decision point was the Democrats. The Democrats could have chosen to go ahead and sign the deal the Republicans had on the table Friday, or just say, you know, we're not going to filibuster it. You know,
I don't think it made a difference. Because here's the thing, right? Well, let me take that back. The whole point of the holding back for about 3 days was this whole thing about DACA, right? That's the point that was being made at the high level.
The point that was made at the high level is the deal that was being offered Friday did not include a DACA fix. It included the chip fix. And it pushed things back to mid-February. The Democrats were like, we don't want to push it back again unless we have DACA. So they said no deal, and we did the shutdown. So,
And then, over the weekend, basically, Mitch McConnell said, I promise that we will deal with it. And I shaved a week off, and then we just went back and.
The Republicans have been saying they'd deal with DACA forever.
Well, they have, but they haven't really done anything.
Well, but they still haven't done anything.
Now he promised. He promised this before, didn't he, the last time they pushed this back. Correct. But for some reason, he didn't want to do it now and push it for 3 weeks. So now we've got. But now remember, all we did is. It's not even 3 weeks anymore. It's 2 weeks.
Right. Now, right. But let me also put out there. Regardless of what McConnell promises, unless you can get it through the House, too, and through Donald Trump, what the
fuck? Well, of course, you know, who the fuck knows what Donald Trump wants, because one day he says he wants something and one day he says he doesn't. I would hope they would go and grab him today, because today, apparently, he goes and he says that he wants something.
Okay, let's get to that in a second. I want to finish with, was it the right strategy to force the shutdown in the first place? Then we'll go to, was it the right strategy to agree to turn it back?
I think it was right, because if it's just to make the point, and it's not like we dragged it into a three-week shutdown. Then yes.
Because another alternative here would just be to say, you know, the Republicans are refusing to give a DACA fix, but not tie it to the government shutdown. The only reason it was tied to the finance bill is because the Democrats wanted to tie it. If the Democrats had decided, we'll treat this as two different issues, we'll go ahead and sign on to the government financing bills that we have to do, and then we'll deal with DACA completely separately, then the two things wouldn't even be linked in people's minds.
Right.
It was their choice to link them. Yeah. And so, to me,
nothing had happened. What was, you have to link it to something, right? I mean, eventually, the Republicans came to the table knowing you link it to the deadlines
running out and people actually getting deported.
Right. Yes. Which is one of the problems with in March. Yes.
So, I mean, I first of all, let me put this out there. And Yvonne and I had a discussion on the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack, which with a nice Patreon donation, you can join too, about this. And fundamentally, in the end, I think the bottom line is none of this fucking matters at all, because the news cycle.
Nobody's going to remember this.
Yeah, the news cycle is so fast. Things move so quickly. We're going to go through this all again on February 8th. What happened in January, people aren't even going to remember a week from now.
Remember. Correct. They're going to remember it by the end of this week, let alone February 8th.
Let alone November.
Let alone November, yes.
So in the end, I don't think this matters very much, except, you did inconvenience a bunch of people this weekend. You did cause some pain to government employees.
I could not log on to the socialsecurity.gov website, and I needed some information, for example. The website – okay, the reason – and let me explain why. So they were doing a system upgrade over the weekend, okay?
Which they couldn't do.
Well, they couldn't do it, finish it, bring the site back up because they went into the shutdown. So Monday I tried to get what I needed from the website, and well, the website is down.
That's lovely. So, but having said that, I don't think it has any real impact in the end. I still kind of feel like the shutdown theatrics were pointless, and the Democrats could, because there are a couple things there. First of all, they didn't really achieve anything substantial. Like you said, okay, they got Chip done, but Chip was on the table anyway, without the shutdown.
Right.
They got the date of the next shutdown battle moved forward 1 week from February 15th to February 8th. But does that really make a fucking difference? And they got McConnell promising to bring this up, but he's been known to violate his promises over and over again.
I did hear that time was of the essence for the DACA fix. So if you got it even a week moved up, it did make a difference. Now, look, here's the thing. There's no political up or down to this. Like you said, look, if you wanted something and you got the week out of it, you got, but it's something that, like you said, in terms of political value one way or another, nobody's going to remember this in 2 weeks from now. It's just irrelevant.
I think you're probably right. The one place I can see is sort of the progressive wing of the Democrats, the Bernie type folks.
But those people complain about everything.
I know. But look,
these are the same fucking people that in the 2012 midterm were not very enthused about Obama because he's not lefty enough for them. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
They go suck it. I don't care.
The argument they have is like, you did this shutdown and then you fucking gave in 3 days without getting jack. But I think this relies upon the assumption that if the Democrats had stretched this into a 3 week shutdown or a 4 week shutdown or a 5 week shutdown,
it was going to be a positive, which in our experience, it hasn't been.
It's not like, do you really believe the Republicans after week four would be like, never mind, here's your DACA?
Exactly. Fuck no. Of course not.
You know, so I don't know. So, okay. Question number one, question number one is done. We've sort of talked about doing this in the first place. I think it was a waste. I think the Democrats shouldn't have done it. There were ways to push DACA without doing this. But okay, fine. They did it. I don't think there's a big consequence.
It didn't make a difference one way or another.
Was it the right call on Monday to say, yes, okay, let's sign on the dotted line, let's reopen it?
I don't know. Actually, right now, the answer to that is, I don't know. We'll know in 2 weeks.
So you're going to judge whether or not that was the right thing to do based on whether McConnell actually comes through and brings something DACA related to a vote before February.
Absolutely. Yes. 100%.
Now, does it matter whether or not that thing passes or whether or not that thing can go through the House or whether Donald Trump signs it? Or is it enough if McConnell?
No, if McConnell actually brings it, then at least we got that to start off with in the first place. Okay. All right. So I think that makes a big difference.
What if he doesn't?
Fuck. Then we got nothing for a whole bunch of noise. But here's the thing. So we're going to be back at three. What the hell are we going to do then? Is my point. I still don't know. I don't know. The one thing I don't understand, the Republicans need the Democrats to make this happen, but yet are unwilling to put they did put something on the table this time, okay, with Chip. But what I keep thinking is, Jesus Christ, the fucking Republican pricks, what are the things that are putting on the table? Oh, well, you know, either we'll fucking cut children's health care, or we'll fucking get rid of all these kids. I mean, these are the things that are holding hostage America, too.
Well, but the thing is also, at least theoretically, Republican leadership all says they wanted both of these things. They wanted Chip. They wanted to figure out a fix for
it.
Right. No, they haven't. But I mean, at least in theory, everybody's agreed that they want to fix these things. But the theory, in theory is important because, you know, judge people by their actions, not their words. It doesn't look like the Republicans wanted these things.
No, it doesn't look like it at all.
And, you know, some of the rhetoric coming out of the immigration hardliners during these negotiations seems clear that, you know, maybe they're, you know, some of the quote-unquote moderate Republicans, the old establishment Republicans, may be of that mold that, yeah, immigration is good. We want these people. We want to help these people. We want a path to citizenship, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But there's a significant portion of the Republican Party, and I'm talking both congressional and in administration and in the public at large, who know that, their preferred outcome here is that you get rid of all these dreamers and send them back to Mexico or whatever.
Or wherever they can.
Or wherever. Yeah, because they're not all from Mexico. But, right. And yes, that's their preferred outcome. They want to see all these kids, like, thrown out. You know?
Right.
And they're not all kids anymore. They were kids when they were brought in.
Right. Now they're, most of them are, a lot of them are adults. That's right. The whole thing.
So, yeah, I mean, and that's also where, you know, you have the sort of fundamental dynamic that there is a bipartisan majority in both the House and Senate that would fix the Dreamer situation in one way or another. But that bipartisan majority is most of the Democrats plus a few Republicans, which means the Republican leadership does not want to go there because they don't have a majority of the Republicans on board.
Right.
And then there's all this, the negotiations here. And so let's talk about that a little bit. And you brought up, again, what the hell does Donald Trump actually want here?
Well, who the fuck knows?
Does he know?
Well,
I don't think he knows.
I don't think he knows. I mean, what he said, look, this was a headline 34 minutes ago, according to this. Okay, all right. So half an hour ago.
So that's,
President Trump said up.
That's Wednesday evening U.S. time. Go ahead.
Wednesday evening U.S. time. After all this all this stuff, President Trump said on Wednesday that he's open to a path to citizenship after 10 to 12 years for hundreds of thousands of undocumented immigrants brought to the United States as children. Days after rejecting a bipartisan plan with that as its centerpiece.
I'll also add, as part of these negotiations, Schumer, when he was trying to make a last-minute deal with Trump on Friday,
offered him some shit on the wall.
Not just some shit on the wall. Basically offered him the whole damn thing. Offered him, we'll agree to the $18 billion to build your damn fucking wall, even though it would be useless and an insult and blah, blah, blah. We'll give you your damn wall. Give us the dreamers. And so, on the one hand, the Democrats sort of laid out their cards there. Now, afterwards, Schumer's like, okay, I take it back. That's not on the table anymore because Donald Trump went back on his word, blah, blah, blah. But the Democrats kind of laid out that they're willing to go there if they feel like they can get the right stuff out of it.
Right. I mean, here's the thing about the wall, right? Look, you got to think about it. Play the long game, right? Look, even if you approve any funding like right now, okay, it's not going to get built like tomorrow, right?
Right.
Number one. So that's the one thing about this.
And the administration themselves, other than Donald Trump himself, are already going, well, we're really just talking about border security. It's not all literally going to be a wall.
It's not literally a wall anymore. So even they're scaling that back too.
Right.
Okay. All right. So, you know, look, I mean, for the last, I don't know, lost count for how many years, we have built pieces of a wall and a border fence and security and a whole bunch of things along the southern wall to monitor monitor the border.
Yeah.
You know, it's not this stupid like wall like as Trump described that would have cost about $100 billion in my real estimate when you take into consideration, you know, real cost of all the cost overruns that a project like this would go into, because that's just reality of such a ridiculously massive construction endeavor. But you know, look, if because it takes so damn long and everything, I mean personally, I thought about it and I'd be like, yeah, what the hell, man, look, throw in the money right now and then later we could kill it,
right?
So what
now? Also, though, part of the back and forth there was, what was the form that it was agreed on? Like, one of the deals that was floating around funded the wall for 1 year in full, right, but not the full 10 years.
Right.
And so, whatever. Yeah, like, I could see that deal, too, because in the end, as we've talked about repeatedly, the wall is useless. It's basically a waste.
Yes, it's a massive just government boondoggle waste of money. What it is insulting to our to Mexico. That's what it is. And it doesn't improve, presumably,
presumably, Donald Trump has friends in the construction industry that could potentially be contractors on the wall and funnel some of that money back to him.
Well, he actually I know that he contacted one specifically that was like super insulted and told him basically to go fuck off. I can't remember his name right now, but he was – I think it was one of – based down here in Miami. But you do understand, right, that still – one thing I'll say this again. The number one provider of cement – this wall, the prototypes I've seen are made – correct.
That's how they're going to pay for the wall, right?
Fat chance of that. They're going to have to buy it, a fucking cement. I mean, they own – they have the largest market share of production of cement, not just in Mexico, but in the United States as well. Okay? So, you know.
Anyway, so where are we now with this? Other than, okay, we got the next deadline on February 8th. But where are the negotiations right now? Who's in favor of what? What the fuck is going on? Or is it even bother? Should we even bother asking the question? Because whatever it is tonight will be different tomorrow.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous question to ask. I mean, everybody has said, listen, even the Republicans have said that they have no idea what the fuck Trump wants on this goddamn deal. Even they don't know. So, I mean, this is the problem, like, right now with dealing with him, trying to negotiate with him right now and what he wants. Nobody has any idea.
Now, one strategy that seems to be going around in Congress is basically that all the leadership is like, fuck, we're done. We have no idea what he wants. We don't have no idea what he's going to do. So let's just ignore him and negotiate amongst ourselves. And also that apparently there were a couple articles this weekend that was the official strategy of the White House staff, was to keep Donald Trump locked up and not let him talk to anybody involved in the negotiations about the shutdown.
Except take that stupid picture of him, like, with the hat and the phone.
Yes.
In his hand,
yes.
Where that, he looked that, like a complete dork.
Yes. They allowed him to do that. But basically, apparently, he kept asking, can I get involved? Can I talk to people? Can I talk to this guy? Can I talk to this guy? I want to help, you know? And his staff is like, no. No.
Well, so what? So he can make another comment.
Listen,
let's be clear about this. The last time that people negotiated and made a deal and walked over to him to present them the deal, what happened?
He blew it up.
He blew it up.
This was like, the shithole countries.
Exactly. Correct. I mean, that's the last thing he did when somebody presented him a deal. So I'm like.
Well, no, the last deal presented was the one on Friday, which was several days after that. And that was, again, a situation where him and Schumer were like at the handshake stage. And according to Schumer, he walked away thinking they were really close to a deal. And Schumer was thinking he might agree to like a 2 or 3 day extension so that they could finish working out that deal and then they'd have something real. And this was where Schumer offered the wall in exchange for the path to citizenship for DACA, for Dreamers, etc. And then Donald Trump walked out of the room and then Stephen Miller and Kelly and all of these guys basically said, no, that's not going to fly. Call him back with these additional demands. And that's when it blew up.
Exactly. So what the hell is, you know, how the hell do you negotiate with these assholes?
Well, and partly this brings up the, okay, who the fuck is really in charge here?
Charge?
And yeah. I think the real answer is nobody.
Nobody.
Because it depends on the exact issue, what's going on any given day. It's not like there's one puppet master who's running Donald Trump. First of all, Donald Trump is a loose cannon. He's all over the place. He doesn't know what he's doing, and he's bouncing back around from thing to thing, and you never know what he'll blow up. Okay. But his staff is all trying to work around him, and it depends on what, you know, who's got the most influence depends on who's talked to Donald Trump most recently and who cares most about which issues, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. In this case, for immigration, it seems like John Kelly and what's his name? Steve Miller? Whatever.
Yeah. Yep.
Steve?
Steve Miller. You got the right name. I always keep like blanking out of his name, but lately it's been like,
yeah, whatever. Yeah. Anyway, these guys apparently got, you know, were the ones getting in front of Donald Trump, along with a few conservative hardliners from Congress, from the House. And so that's where you ended up. And the question is, how is that going to change between now and February 8th? What dynamic is it? Because you really have a hardcore group of people who, in the end, they do want to shut down immigration. They want to shut down legal immigration. It's not just about illegal immigration.
Right.
It's not just about the Dreamers.
They only want people from Norway.
Yeah. They really fundamentally believe that it is a major problem that the United States keeps letting in people who aren't like white Europeans.
Correct.
White European Christians. Let's be more
specific. You know what? I made a comment like today that imagine if, you know, since, you know, they keep saying that Democrats are trying to, I was reading about this guy who in Maine who got fired because apparently he was like a defender of white rights or some shit like this. And he was like, he wanted like to, that the races separate. He was like the city manager for some town in Maine or something.
Okay.
So imagine, this is a story just recently in the Times this week. So the town terminated him. There was a big brouhaha about it. But imagine if Obama said, well, you know, this country's way too damn white. So why don't we make sure, you know, we don't want those white people and make sure that we've got an immigration policy that brings more Africans and like Latinos into the country in order to make sure that the country is browner.
Right.
I mean, do you imagine the outrage over a comment like that? I mean, I'm just, you know, but no, he's just, you know, he's just negotiating. He's not racist, blah, 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 blah. Oh, give me a fucking break.
So, I mean, look, again, where I keep coming back to is what is the breakthrough that is going to lead anything to be different on February 8th?
I don't know.
I actually do believe there is a path to passing something in the Senate. But then you still got the House.
Right.
And that's a lot harder from everything I've been reading.
And they have been the obstacle before. I mean, a number of years ago, there was a bipartisan bill passed on immigration reform, and it died in the House.
Yeah. Well, and this also ties to, you know, actually allowing the vote to happen as well, because you might be close, because, again, it's the dynamic of most or all of the Democrats plus some Republicans. And does the Speaker of the House allow that to happen?
Right. Yeah.
And I don't know, you know, I mean, on the one hand, you know, Paul Ryan was actually one of those immigration reformers last time around, was he not? Do I remember that wrong?
I don't remember. I don't remember.
I believe Paul Ryan at one stage in his career was, you know, more centrist on immigration and then moved radically right at some point because he realized he had to in order to do something. Please, somebody correct me. I'm going to have to look this up now because this is a vague memory and I'm now doubting myself.
I think you may be right. I do think you're right. Could be wrong, but I think
so. If Paul Ryan really is like, okay, I'm out after this year, then maybe what the fuck?
Yeah.
But even then, there's a question of can you get enough Republicans? But I think that's the big stopping point has always been they don't even want to bring something up unless it has a majority of the Republicans to start with. And when the leadership goes against that, that causes them other problems. But we'll inevitably see.
We, But we're gonna be talking about it in two weeks.
Yeah, but also frankly, you know, and this is where, like I've said before, like the filibuster stuff and everything else, you know, a potential Democratic strategy. I mean, I know we're in resist mode to try to stop everything, but another potential strategy is just let the fucking Republicans get what they want and then see the effects of it. And if people don't like the effects, all the more reason to vote them out. Now, of course, the problem with that is you hurt a bunch of people in the meantime. But if your effort to resist is doomed anyway, if you're not actually going to be able to do it, then...
Well, the thing is, look, the Republicans keep making every single noise trying to say that, no, we want to make a deal. Right. We do want to do something for these people. Yeah, I'm like, well, true. You got to try to get them to do something, right?
Yeah, there's something to be said for, even if you know it's a losing effort, even if you know you don't have what you need in order to stop the other side from doing what they want, there's something to be said for putting every obstacle you can in its way to show your base that you're trying. You know, it's like, I know I can't do it, but maybe I can slow them down a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the mode the Democrats are in. And maybe they'll figure out a way to finagle this because, again, all the Republicans are giving lip service to they want to solve this, too. Well, if you really do, then solve the fucking thing.
Exactly.
You don't even need the Democrats to do it. Solve it your damn self.
Yep.
But the problem is there are enough Republicans who don't want to solve it that you have to do it with Republicans and Democrats together. But... you know, the Republicans want some fix, but not as far as the Democrats want. And this comes back to the good old fashioned, like, well, figure out a compromise in the middle. But we're so divided at this point. And also, honestly, it's something where, you know, I saw one person put it, you know, okay, there's what is it? 700,000 Dreamers, right? And so, Is it an appropriate compromise for the Democrats to say, okay, fine, we'll only deport 500,000 of them, but 200,000 can stay?
Oh, gosh, that sounds horrible.
You know, could the Democrats say yes to that and say at least we saved the 200,000? Or do the Democrats get...
No, you got to let them do that.
Yeah.
Let them do that. If they want to do that, then you got to let them do that. But you can't be.
Well, and this is the kind of compromises
you can't be complicit to this. Look, it's like the complicit to this is like the same discussion I was having today. I hear this explanation. Oh, well, these people think that Donald Trump is great because it's good for business and good for the economy. And what my response is, you know what? If compromising minorities, inciting hate, racism, all of these things is worth a couple of bucks in your pocket, you should be ashamed of yourself. Because it's not to me. Hmm. Fuck out. Give back the fucking stock market gains. He can fucking shove them up his ass.
All of the potential compromises between the Republican position and the Democratic position right now end up being, you know, we're, at least from the Democratic point of view, look like, okay, we're not really going to do the right thing, but we'll do a couple things a little bit better than we're doing now. But we're still going to screw over a lot of people, just less, and in a slightly different way.
No, if they're going to do that, let them do that themselves. Like you said, they could do it, I mean, themselves, and they've chosen not to. The hell with them. I mean, you know, no.
Right. I don't know. Well, again, I guess we'll see. Anything else to say about the shutdown and immigration, or is it time for our break?
Breaky.
Okay, we'll be back, and we'll talk about Mueller back after this. Mueller. Talk about Mueller.
After the break.
You're listening to this podcast. Do you like it?
No!
Do you want to support the show?
No!
Well, after you have subscribed to the show, followed us on Facebook, and told all your friends they should be listening to, what else can you do?
I won't subscribe!
You can help fund our Patreon at patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner. Patreon is a way you can throw us a few bucks a month to help out with the expenses of the show. You know, web hosting, equipment, a little bit of advertising to promote the show, and maybe every once in a while some much needed sedatives for Yvonne. At different contribution levels, you can get a mention on the show, our Curmudgeon's Corner postcard, or even a Curmudgeon's Corner mug. Fun stuff.
Not fun.
In any case, the contributions help tell us that you enjoy and appreciate the show.
I really, really hate Curmudgeon's Corner.
Are we worth a buck a month?
No!
$5 a month?
No!
Or if you are nuts about us, maybe even more.
$100 billion, even though you don't have anywhere near $1 billion.
If we're worth anything to you at all, send it our way at patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner.
Alex hates, really, really hates, Curmudgeon's Corner! That's really mean, isn't it? But I hate Curmudgeon's Corner, but I really do!
Okay, we are back, and so the Mueller investigation, Russia, obstruction of justice.
Are you sure?
I'm pretty sure. Go check. Go check.
Oh, fuck. Okay, all right, I'll look it up. Anyway. All right, go ahead.
All of the associated things. I'm going to go through my list, because there have been a couple from the last few weeks. So first of all, there was a thing about Wendy Murdoch and China and Kushner.
Yep.
And so just to remind people, it's Wendy Deng Murdoch. She used to be married to Rupert Murdoch. They got divorced a while ago.
Yep.
There were rumors that at one point she was dating Vladimir Putin.
Yep.
Unproven, I guess. She denies it. She denies it.
Yeah.
Wendy Murdoch.
Mueller. Yeah, you're right. Mueller.
There you go. Mueller. Wendy Murdoch hangs out a lot with Ivanka and Jared right. Kushner. They go on vacation together. They've done things like this before. But now the latest story is a question of whether or not Wendy Murdoch is actually acting as an agent for the Chinese government.
Correct.
To try to influence Jared and Ivanka to try to influence the administration. Now,
that's about right.
The one interesting thing about this was, of course, this was reported by one of Rupert Murdoch's papers. And Rupert Murdoch has apparently been trying to spread rumors about his ex-wife being a Chinese agent for years. Because he doesn't like her anymore, because she's his ex-wife. So I have no idea what to think of this one.
I don't know what to make of it either. I have heard that not just from one of his newspapers, but from others. Okay, that rumor's been around.
Also, his TV stations.
There was some stuff in the you know. Well, she was also going out. What the hell with the British Prime Minister? Wasn't
yes, she was. Which one?
Tony Blair, I think.
Tony Blair. Yeah. She's been around.
Around, man. Tell you what. I mean, seriously. I mean, let's see. We're talking.
And I'm not Tony talking. Blair. And by the way, just to be clear, I'm not slut shaming. I'm not.
No, it's not sexual. I'm not talking about.
It's not that. It's just not, she's got a lot of really.
I mean, Jesus. Rupert she's got, Murdoch. I mean,
Rupert Murdoch. Vladimir I mean,
she
Putin.
Really,
he's
connected
Blair.
In a lot of high places. Is what I mean by that. Yes. I mean. You know, it's like, I don't know. It's not like I stopped dating. Whenever I stopped dating some person, I didn't wind up with. I don't know. Jesus. It's a series of very high profile people. Let's just say. Okay. Yes. That she is usually involved with. I don't know. But listen.
Yeah.
Would it really surprise you?
No.
If it's. No.
It wouldn't surprise me at all. First of all, like, it doesn't even have to be she's a formal agent of the Chinese government. She's advocating certain interests
for the Chinese directly to, you know.
Right. Now, what makes it you know, understandable as well, though, is according to everything we've seemingly seen, although I don't know, maybe nothing's been proven beyond a shadow of a doubt yet, it certainly sounds like Kushner is easily manipulated by these kinds of things.
That's what it sounds like. I mean, let's say he met, you know, he keeps meeting with people of this kind of crap. Well, so,
and look, these things get washed away so quickly in this news cycle. There was a thing a while back about Kushner getting in trouble for selling visas.
Yes.
And things like that. This is all.
Wow. Correct.
So this is just
in the investor visas. Yes.
Yes. This is just another element of. Here's yet another thing that if Mueller wanted to dive deep into this, he certainly could.
Yes, absolutely.
Next, we had some reports.
And that's you assuming that he hasn't.
Right, right. I mean, I actually assume he probably has. But
right.
there is a question of exactly where he's concentrating. Is he going after all this stuff? We'll talk about that in a second. But the next thing was this report about Russia funneling money to the Trump campaign via the National Rifle Association.
Oh, yes.
Because there
and
were.
Notice how the NRA hasn't said a word. Not one ever since that report has come out. Nothing.
Now,
to
be clear, the way this works is there is a rich Russian who gave a bunch of money to the NRA who operates a parallel organization to the NRA in Russia, and they have common interests about guns and blah, blah, blah. So he's just donating the money. And then the NRA, of course, did make some donations to various PACs and other things that were supporting Donald Trump. But this rich Russian, of course, is best buds with Vladimir Putin. Now,
I found out that most of the listen, the only people that are really that rich in Russia have to be connected with Vladimir Putin.
Right. And
yes.
So there's a question, of course, of like, well, what is the... And this is intentionally vague by the way the Russians set things up, of course. It's like,
right.
What is an official action by the Russian government versus what are...
Listen,
it's just Russian
what
individuals
I have found
doing
out
this.
From being in Russia that people over there don't do... something like that, unless they have the tacit approval from Putin. Period. Nobody over there would risk themselves without having the tacit approval from him. Russia, even till today, they, you know, look, is a country that was run by one of the things I, you know, you, digging into it, SARS, you know, you had the Communist Party. And now you have Putin. They have they are a country that has been used to the strong man. Right. Okay.
And there's the sort of the official government versus what's really going on. And there's a power structure that is unofficial, not just like what the correct thing is on the piece
and,
of paper.
And that power structure that has been enabled by Putin doesn't go and do something that without knowing that he would be to have his their tacit approval of it, that he wouldn't be upset by it.
Right. And part of this is, I mean, there's also the connection, the government versus organized crime versus Putin personally, right, versus the intelligence service versus whatever. Right. They're all intertangled, but not officially. You know,
right.
So there's a lot of strangeness going on there. So anyway, there's the question of if money was indeed funneled from the Russian oligarch to the NRA to Russia, is this legal from a campaign finance point of view? Because, you know, foreign donations directly are illegal, but, you know, here we go through these chains. This is where money laundering comes in, you know?
Correct.
It's the whole point is making it as having the same effect as if you'd given the money directly, but going through intermediaries so that you can sort of not you can sort of claim innocence of the connection. And just another example that came up this week is there is what could be a complete coincidence, but it turns out that, you know, we had this story about Donald Trump paying the porn star $130,000 to not say anything about their relationship. Well, it turns out that right about the same time that that payment happened, there was also a payment from the Donald Trump campaign to the Trump organization for $130,000 for rent.
Gee, what a coincidence! For rent. Uh-huh, rent. Yeah. You know, I heard from a guy that I knew that when they used to hire an organization that shut down from years ago, which apparently they used to grease some government functionaries to get some contracts, okay? And they told me that the instructions that they got from management to do that, to expense it, was to label it as lumber.
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 Now, it could just be that the amount of rent that the campaign was paying Trump Tower happened to be exactly $130,000, and that happened to be exactly the amount that was paid to the porn star.
Yeah, it's all a coincidence.
So yeah, I mean, and
it's just like the most coincidental year we've ever had in history.
Well, and this is why, just tying it back to Mueller again, where is the concentration? So far, the indictments have been around basically two things: lying to the FBI, or money laundering related things, right? I mean, that's basically what we've seen so far. So there's a question of, is there going to be a deep, deep concentration on let's figure out all the money shit? And honestly, I'd be surprised if there wasn't. But most of the new news this week that we're still got more to get into in a second, seems to be surrounding the obstruction of justice part of things. So we've got money laundering, we've got obstruction of justice, and of course, we've got was there actually some sort of quid pro quo with Russia? As I've said before, I think actually proving a direct quid pro quo with Russia is the hardest of those things to do. It seems like the others are almost slam dunks. Donald Trump practically admitted to obstruction of justice on live TV with Lester Holt.
Correct.
And there have been all kinds of other things that lead that to be clear that that's the case. And the money laundering seems to be the normal mode of business of practically everybody surrounding Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yep.
Okay, moving on from Trump, Russia, NRA. Next thing, Mueller and the Trump interview. We talked about this 2 weeks ago, that it looked like there might be this coming. It seems like it's been confirmed now. Mueller does want to talk to Donald Trump. The Donald Trump's lawyers and the Mueller team, and I keep pronouncing it differently every time I say the word. I just suck. Mueller. Anyway, they are talking now and trying to figure out what to do. And they are doing this sort of polite negotiation right now, like what will happen here. But the bottom line is Mueller holds all the cards here. If Trump's lawyers start trying to impose conditions that Mueller doesn't like, Mueller can just say, okay, screw this negotiating stuff. Here's your subpoena. You have to come in on this date.
Right.
So, you know, it is the normal thing to do when you are interviewing a really high profile individual to do the contacts with the lawyers and trying to negotiate terms that everybody agrees on, blah, blah, blah. But they don't have to. That's a courtesy. And it's a courtesy that they apparently are extending to the president to try to negotiate something that they can agree on and be somewhat civil about. But if the lawyers try to push too much, like if they say, like one of the things they are apparently wanting is all the questions in writing in advance, or to provide answers in writing.
I think that actually, by the way, I don't know about providing the answers in writing, but providing the questions in advance, like in a deposition type of whatever, is not unusual to get written questions.
I think it is reasonable to perhaps provide some questions in writing.
No, the one thing is that what I think what you do is that, look, you provide them in writing in advance, But that it doesn't mean that depending on the answers you provide that you're not allowed to ask other questions.
Well, and I think honestly, I don't think Mueller should agree to even that, because there's what you're trying to get at here. You're actually trying to catch him in contradictions for what other people have said. You don't want to give an opportunity to coordinate in advance and make sure you've got your story straight.
Well, I get that. I mean, but and it depends on the questions that you're asking.
And also, I frankly, if I was Mueller, I also wouldn't want to give away all my cards in terms of what I was saying a couple minutes ago in terms of which areas are we concentrating on? Because clearly, the word so far is this interview is going to concentrate on the obstruction of justice part. Mueller wants to know about the firing of Comey and what was going on with John Kelly. But if he got into that room and then started asking questions about, you know, Trump organization money things from 3 years ago, you know, that's legit.
Right. No, agreed.
I don't know. If I was Mueller, I would give some deference.
Well, obviously, my preference would be that, you know, he shows up. He'll be told, and just has to answer questions directly under oath. I mean, that would be ideal.
The kind of places I would give leniency is, okay, you want to testify to the grand jury via video instead of coming in person? Sure. But I don't want to give him the questions. I don't want to get the answers in writing. I want him to be on the spot directly. Negotiate on the time and place that it's going to happen, not on the content, not on that kind of stuff.
I mean, I agree with you. I think obviously I understand why his attorneys are absolutely terrified of this. Okay. If I were his attorney, I would be absolutely terrified of this because the man is just it just doesn't have control over how he's answering these questions.
You expect at any moment he's just going to go off in a random direction.
I'm guilty. It's like
the
Code Red. You didn't see that movie?
No, but
for those of you who have seen the movie with Jack Nicholson and Tom Cruise, where they go and they're interrogating Jack Nicholson, and my God, the frickin' name of the movie right now is escaping me. But he goes and he puts him on the stand, and he said, "I'm going to put him on the stand because I want him to admit it on the stand." You know, until he makes the questions, until the guy just comes out.
Are you talking A Few Good Men?
Exactly. That's right.
You Can't Handle the Truth. I have seen that movie. It was a long time ago, though.
Exactly. That's what he wants to do.
You can't handle the truth.
Right. Okay. All right. And the thing is that you would be worried that Trump is going to do that because that's him.
Well, you know, the thing is, Trump basically, especially on the obstruction of justice
part. Of course I fired him. I hated the Russia investigation. I wanted this thing over with.
Well, right, because
the
thing is, and this is why they call it a perjury trap, potentially. If they've got significant evidence of obstruction of justice, Donald Trump has two choices come in here. Either he, when asked the question about obstruction of justice, admits it and effectively admits to committing a crime, or he says he didn't, in which case he's in a perjury trap because he just perjured himself by denying something that they have evidence is true.
Correct.
Now, a couple of people.
What you could do. Listen, the other part is quite simple. Look, you can not answer.
You can plead the fifth. And there is also, although that there's certain, you know, that looks bad, but Donald Trump doesn't care.
But it doesn't matter.
But the other thing that Donald Trump is really freaking good at, the fourth way to deal with that, is to answer in a way that is ambiguous. Say, you know,
he's not actually good about that. He's good about trapping himself by saying a whole bunch of shit. I've seen the videotapes of his depositions.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He goes and
here's the scenario, for instance, on Comey. And like the obstruction of justice is he was pressuring Comey to let Kelly off the hook. And he could claim, no, look, you know, I was talking to him about how Kelly was a good guy, and I hoped it came out okay to him. But any impression that Comey might have gotten that I was giving him a directive to not continue the investigation, that's all in Comey's head. I was just telling him how good a guy Kelly is, and how I hoped it comes out. It comes out okay.
Right.
You know, so, and so you can answer that way. And of course, there's always the "I don't recall," "I don't remember" kind of answers.
Which works. The problem, listen, that's fine. Look, I've been in depositions a number of times. Okay, that one works. Look, just don't. You're better off instead of giving. You know, sometimes you get a whole bunch of these questions.
Just to be clear, the only times you've ever said you don't remember, you actually didn't remember.
Well, what I'm saying, but let me explain. Look, I said I don't remember many cases where I wasn't absolutely sure of what the correct answer was.
Right.
Maybe I had a recollection, but I wasn't sure. And it's better off to go and just say, I don't remember, than to wind up trapping yourself in an answer, okay, all right, that maybe either you committed perjury, either you block it. No, you're better off.
Well, and frankly, depending on how, you know, like if you asked me a question about the meeting I was in at work, you know, 6 hours ago as
exactly.
I'm recording this, like,
right.
Do I remember word for word what that guy across the table from me said? No, I have no idea what he said.
Well, that's what I'm like, saying.
And I may be able to guess a general gist, but.
Because you could, because. Look, if it wasn't under oath or it wasn't something like that, I would ask you the question and you could try to tell me what the hell it is and you're not worried about any legal ramifications about that. But if I'm asking you under oath to ask to answer that, I mean,
you're going to be very careful with your words. You're going to put a lot of caveats in there. Maybe you're just going to say, I don't remember. Or even if you do say something, you're going to be like, look, he said something related to the subject, but I don't remember the exact words, blah, blah, blah.
I would do that. The problem is that I know people like that are like Trump. Unfortunately, one of them that I know that unfortunately is in jail right now. When faced with SEC and FBI investigators, the fucking people came in, right? Okay. Sat down to ask him questions instead of shutting the fuck up. Okay. Started answering questions, said a whole bunch of things that wound up burying him in a hole he could never get out of. Okay? Instead of saying either, I don't remember, I don't know, you can't do that. You can't do that, okay? Especially if you haven't prepared with your counsel and you're not sure, you're better off instead of – But the problem is that, like I say, if I'm Trump's lawyer, I'm freaked out because this guy always wants to be right. I mean, for God's sakes, he went on the fucking TV, for God's sakes, and basically almost admit, you know, flat out admitted obstruction of justice on fucking TV. Like an idiot.
Right.
I mean, what the hell do I expect him to do in front of a freaking like prosecutor?
Like, if he was asked directly, did you fire Comey because of the way the Russian investigation was going, he might just say yes. Yes,
yeah.
I did.
And you're like an attorney, you're like, oh my God, here, just give me a gun.
But, you know, I mean, I guess to some degree, you get, like, I think Trump's actual position, like, if you actually asked him, he really honestly feels like he's done nothing wrong. And that he should be able to say exactly what really happened, because even if he did tell Comey to go stop the investigation, that's fine. That's what a president should be able to do. That's what he really and truly believes.
That's what he believes. Right.
And so he might just come out and say it. And then,
right.
And then, you know, look, his lawyers can then try to make that argument. And certainly some of the Trump supporters have tried to make that argument, is that the president can't be guilty of obstruction of justice because it's his Justice Department and he can have him do whatever he wants.
Well, apparently a whole bunch of Trump supporters also believe that apparently that the Marshal Service can go in and start arresting FBI and DOJ agents just because.
Well, OK, so let's I think that was a couple things down on my list, but let's talk about that real quick. There has been this huge push in the last few weeks to talk about how the Mueller investigation is completely compromised because it's full of liberals.
Release the memo!
The memo is about the surveillance thing that may have happened and the unmasking, all this bullshit. So there are all kinds of spin going on to try to discredit the investigation in one way or another. That all seem to have the common element of let's criticize these particular people that were involved in the investigation and what they may or may not have done and what their political viewpoints may or may not have been. And let's concentrate on that while we completely ignore the actual evidence of the main topic. Now, I'm actually fully, like, if there was an improper, if something improper happened in the course of the investigation, okay, whoever did that should be appropriately punished for that. But if we're after the truth, then we should continue to follow that evidence anyway, regardless of how it came about. Now, some of that, if there really is some, you know, what is it, the fruit of the poison vine or whatever, poison tree, there might be some legal implications, maybe. But so far, nothing I've actually heard implies that. So, for instance, they keep talking about these two FBI agents who were going back and forth in texts with their anti-Trump rants and were taken off the investigation. I have yet to see anything at all that actually shows that any of their product, anything that they produced, was
tainted.
Was tainted or even directly relevant to what's being looked at today.
Right.
You know? This, by the way, I spent a little bit of time over the last few days listening to some right-wing Trump-supporting podcasts, and it's an entirely different universe. You know, I have not turned on Fox because I don't have cable anymore. But from everything I hear, if you turn on Fox these days, it's still all about Hillary Clinton and the email investigation.
Yes.
And
yes.
Did somebody do something wrong there? And was the FBI trying to help Hillary Clinton? If so, they did a fucking horrible job.
Here's my whole thing. I don't understand how these fucking psychopaths. Okay, all right. Can go on one side, say that there's this entire – the FBI is completely corrupt in a deep state in order to topple Trump, right? Mm-hmm. Well, at the same time, the whole Hillary thing has been going on. And I'm like, really? I just – yeah.
Well, no. I mean it's somewhat consistent. They were the – well, no, it's not.
No, it's not.
there is some significant evidence that, you know, the New York part of the FBI was actively trying to help Donald Trump, including with the revelations about the email investigation in the last week of the thing. But at the same time, they're saying the FBI as a whole was helping Hillary, and there's just a lot of confusion there.
Honestly, you can
make some sense out of it by saying different parts of the FBI were going in different directions.
But that's I can understand that the law enforcement. Let's start with the fact that the whole Hillary email investigation did not start like with some rogue people. Okay, this is something that started because of something that Hillary screwed up, which turned into a very big investigation, culminating in the whole mess with Loretta Lynch and Comey and Bill and all these people. Okay, all right, but it wasn't. It didn't start because of nothing. Okay, all right. Look, there was, you know, Hillary, as You oh, and yeah. I said when we found out about this, completely fucked up and was using a private server for communication.
And the way she reacted to it through the whole damn thing made her look even worse.
It made her look guilty.
Unlike Fox News, we don't have to go back and relitigate the whole Hillary Clinton stuff. But yes, Hillary Clinton did do something wrong. It was fully investigated over a long period of time. They determined
there was nothing chargeable.
She was an idiot. Everybody
yeah, she was an idiot. Was an That's idiot. About it, basically. You know, so I don't, and you know, I mean, they, you know, as much as I may like it politically or not, that's people do their job. Look, are there politically motivated prosecutions? I believe that there are. I mean, there is prosecutorial discretion, but at the same time, you know, look. This whole investigation started, you know, look at where the origins of this thing started, because it came to light of all these Russian attempts, the hacking, the communications, all of these things. These were not like this is not some FBI agents woke up and, oh, how do we make up a conspiracy? Huh? Oh, you know, it wasn't anything like that at all.
Well, and stepping back to this whole release the memo they're talking about is a memo written by Nunes. It's not right. Like some objective analysis of what was going on.
Not at all. I mean, you know,
Nunes had to recuse himself from the whole damn investigation because incontrovertible evidence that he was working with the White House to try to throw smoke in the air.
Exactly. You know? Now we're supposed to believe a memo about this situation, about the origins, that's written from the guy who supposedly was supposed to have recused himself, but apparently hasn't really recused himself at all.
Now,
and it's still fucking like deep in this damn thing.
Having said that, the memo about how the FISA warrant was originated and all that, if there really was something bad there, Donald Trump has the power to declassify that, the actual...
Exactly. He could have declassified that already.
He could have declassified that. Now, from what the Democrats say, part of the problem with this is that to get to the underlying information beyond the Nunes memo, you would have to declassify some highly sensitive stuff. And that's why it's so bad.
Oh, no shit. Really?
And that's why, you know, the Nunes memo makes a whole bunch of unsubstantiated claims, but the evidence
know that nobody is going to fucking like
declassify the stuff that would prove it one way or the other
because what's in there.
Right.
Fucking dumbass.
Okay. So
I would love to like do something torturous to Nunes, not kill him, but just,
Yvonne is speaking metaphorically.
Right, I'm just talking about, could we just, like, cover him in baby oil and, like, leave him on the beach asleep until he, like, you know, like, gets a really bad sunburn?
Okay. Anyway.
But that kind of stuff. I'm not talking, stuff like that.
Moving on to other things from this week. There were reports that Trump asked the acting FBI director, McCabe, right? Did I have the name right?
Yes, McCabe.
Who he voted for. Right after he fired Mueller. Fired Mueller. Now, that's probably next week. After he fired Comey, the acting director was McCabe, who is a career person. He's not a political appointee. He's been with the FBI forever. And so Trump asked him who he voted for. He said he didn't vote. Now, of course, the right answer is none of your business, Mr. President. But he answered that he didn't vote. There's been a lot said about this guy in terms of the fact that his wife ran for office as a Democrat and received, of course, campaign contributions from other prominent Democrats. And so this is another person that they're trying to say is partisan and you shouldn't trust him and blah, blah, blah. And so he can't be involved and he needs to go. And he's also, by coincidence, he's one of the group of, I believe it's only five or six people that Comey shared the information about what happened in his meetings with Trump, with. And so apparently of those five, something like three or four of them have already been, you know, fired or reassigned or moved in one way or another out of their positions. But yeah, so there's this, and of course, this is another area where even asking that question could, it might be a stretch to say it's obstruction of justice, but it's clearly not something that is considered appropriate for a president to do with a position like the FBI director. Let's see, going down this list, we already talked about maybe the campaign paid for the porn star payoff, which would also be a potential crime. Apparently, Sessions gave testimony to Mueller not that long ago. So ties into the obstruction of justice. Comey also apparently talked to Mueller in the last half of December. So he also is clearly, these questions seem to be most likely about obstruction of justice, although Sessions is potentially Russia stuff too, so it's hard to say. And then there was also reports of Trump pressuring Ray, who's Ray now? Right. Assistant.
He's a new FBI director.
New FBI director. Pressuring Ray to fire McCabe because of this other stuff. And Ray apparently saying, threatening to resign if he kept getting that kind of pressure. And apparently they backed off after that.
Right. Nothing happening, right?
So I don't know. I think that the interesting thing to, I guess one more question. Traditionally, when we have these kinds of investigations, they work their way up, and sort of the biggest target is like the last one they talk to before that they really wrap things up. Now, if they really are going to talk to Donald Trump sometime in the next few weeks, does that mean that Trump's lawyers may actually be right and we're close to the end of this damn thing because they're actually going to talk to Trump now?
It's possible. It's possible. It is possible.
And so, but what do we think in that case that that means what?
That doesn't mean that after they talk to him, it's not like all of a sudden like Don Jr. or some people get charged with something is what I'm saying. It means that it's close to by end. Remember something. We've got people already charged or going to trial. Okay, and people who have made pleas. Okay,
right.
So, what it means I think that my interpretation is that it means that it's getting to the point of either we're going to be charging certain people, or we're going to decide that there's not enough to go in another direction. That's what it means. It means it's the end before charges are placed. Now, remember, charges are placed, and then we've got to go. Then we've got an entire process that goes after that.
Right. But do you think that means if we really get Donald Trump testifying to Mueller, let's say sometime in February, does that mean by March Mueller's going to indict everybody he's going to indict?
I would expect that whoever he's going to charge is going to be charging by March.
Hmm.
I mean, look, it's been a year.
I know it's been a year, but I mean, that's actually kind of fast. You know, you'd think.
Well, there was a lot of. Well, wait, it's been a year by Mueller. Remember, there were people investigating this for another 9 months at least before that.
It hasn't been a year for Mueller yet. Mueller was not appointed until a little bit later in the spring.
Oh, yeah, it'll be a year. I mean, what I'm saying, he was appointed in what the hell? Was it in March? So it'll be a year in March. But what I'm saying is that there were people investigating from the year before it started with a FISA warrant. So really, to this summer, it would be 2 years of investigation.
True, true. But, you know, I honestly, I was thinking like the interview Donald Trump, I didn't think it would be anywhere near this soon, to be honest. I thought there's all kinds of additional stuff to dig into. But of course, the other bit of this is we don't actually know how much he's already got. Because so little has leaked out of the Mueller investigation.
Well, nothing's leaked, so we don't know. Maybe he's going to charge Putin.
And that would be interesting. but, yeah, I mean, like, because we all assume it's very easy to assume that the only things that are going on are the things that actually made it into the press.
Well, look, and listen, we were absolutely completely blindsided by Papadopoulos.
Yeah, because who the hell had heard of him?
Exactly.
As well as Manafort's little guy.
Right.
Who, by the way, apparently, there were reports this week as well that that guy, whose name I forget, was it Smith or something?
Something like that.
But he's apparently now trying to make a deal with Mueller as well.
Right. So, if the guy is trying to make a deal, what do you think he's going to do when he makes a deal? They got to roll over on some people.
Yes.
You see, this is what I'm saying. I'm saying that this may be the end of the...
It's the end of the beginning.
Right. Correct.
I've said to Yvonne a few times, I don't believe I've said it on the show, but... I guess we did a couple weeks ago say something like this, but they really need to just televise. If Donald Trump testifies, it just needs to be on
that
TV.
Would be a fantastic pay-per-view.
Just
event.
Do it on live TV.
I never want to see Trump talking on TV. I usually, whenever he's on, I will change the channel or I'll put on headphones like I had to do. Like one time that they had him, like when he was doing his inauguration or stuff like that. I just didn't want to hear his crap. But that a deposition. Damn, I want to see that. Live. Yeah. Pay-per-view. Woo!
Oh, well, we could only wish.
Only wish, yes.
I guess the Bill Clinton testimony in his deposition eventually was made public. It wasn't live TV, but eventually we got to see it.
Well, but, we've advanced technology.
There you go.
YouTube. On Twitter, they got live video, Facebook Live, Periscope it.
Yeah, there we go. It's not even a scheduled live event. It's just once Donald Trump sits down, he tweets a link to a live stream from his phone sitting at the desk with Mueller.
Yes.
Just
live Periscope ever.
Actually kind of surprised. We haven't already gotten an accidental live stream from Trump's phone already.
That's true.
Like, while he's doing his little tweet storms, while he's sitting on the toilet in the morning, just accidentally hits the button and starts live streaming.
I have not had that image of him sitting in the toilet and fucking tweeting. Okay, all right. Thank you. Thank you so much. I'm sure that our audience really appreciates you implanting that into their thoughts right now.
Well, yeah. But just someday there'll be a live stream.
I have not. I was not on to declare myself as a girther. I'm a full-on girther.
You are a girther.
Yes, I am.
You believe Donald Trump actually weighs more and is shorter than was reported last week.
I mean, it's not just believing it. I mean, it's just impossible for it to be otherwise.
It's his weight on the moon.
That's it.
Okay, with that, I think we have come to the end. Two segments plus our intro segment. How do we do, guys? Do you like it better? I mean, we still went a decent
length. Let us know if this length is good.
You're just in general two topics instead of three, because threes are normal. Sometimes we even do four, but threes are normal. Our intro plus three segments is sort of our standard format. Should we permanently move to intro plus two segments? Does it make it a little bit more manageable? Send us your feedback. And to do that, first of all, you can actually email us feedback@curmudgeons-corner.com, and it'll come to both Yvonne and I, or go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/curmudgeonscorner, and leave a comment on the episode, and of course all the other stuff. Share with your friends, let them know that they should tune in, and all that kind of stuff, and as well as commenting on that, give us your thoughts on anything we've been talking about, or request topics for the future, all of that sort of thing. If you like the show a lot, go to iTunes, review the show, review the podcast, let people know, give it 5 stars. If you hate the show, don't bother. Although if you hate the show, you should have like turned it off like an hour ago. Why are you still here?
Right.
No, really. Come on. And finally, if you really want to help us out, patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner. You can throw us a couple bucks a month or whatever. For $2 a month, you get access to the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack. At higher levels, you can get all kinds of stuff like a postcard from us, a mug, all kinds of fun stuff.
Yep.
Okay. That's it. That's the show. Thanks, everybody. We'll talk to you next week. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.